Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 7th, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
How's it going, buddy?
It's going great.
It is?
Election's over. No more phone calls. No more ads. Of course, terrible candidates won, but that's all right. At least they won't be calling me again for another 6 months.
I would put up with the calls for another couple of weeks if we could change the candidates. Believe me, who won the damn thing.
Well, a lot of stuff going on here. I'm actually excited about the show. We got a ton of stuff to talk about this
week.
And, first of all, our Ante Up Poker Tour series is in full bloom, right down the street at Turvey Lane. And I got to tell you, I was driving over there the other day, and I was thinking as I was driving how cool it is to be driving to an Ante Up Poker Tour event.
Yeah, exactly.
Every other event I've had to get on a plane and fly, not that I mind that at all, I love it. But right. It was just really cool to know that should have been 20 minutes door to door, but rush hour traffic. It was 4 hours door to door, but I was driving and I got to go home and sleep in my own bed, so that's really cool. So, just a reminder to everybody out there listening, our series here at Derby Lane in St. Petersburg, Florida, will continue through November 16th, and lots of cool events. And of course, the main event is just doing really great. This best little tournament in the USA, they're calling it. $150 buy-in, $250,000 guaranteed prize pool, 18 starting flights, and we got a celebrity that's moved on, which we'll talk about a little bit later, but people are really enjoying this format, and it's an accumulator, so you move on your five biggest stacks, so you know, people were kind of telling us when we booked this thing, and that, you know, hey, are you guys going to get $250,000 in this thing?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. I hope so. But I think Jeff Gamber, the director of poker there, his wisdom is being proven right here because the field sizes have been tremendous for the first however many flights they've had so far, six or so.
Yeah, it's like seven. And the thing about it, too, is you know if it's been tremendous early on, later on people are just going to – they're going to keep wanting to qualify that extra stack, and they keep getting their money back when they do qualify, so they keep getting these free shots at it, you know the numbers are only going to go up when it gets toward the end.
Yeah, I know you're hoping for a fast transition at the end, but I got to mention him now here, our good friend Mike, the Bard Faso is the celebrity that's moved on to day two, not a big stack, but he's moved on. But he's done exactly what Derby Lane had hoped the players would do, because the way this works, it's the top 12% in each day one move on, but they're immediately paid $150 out of the prize pool, a la November 9-ish, right?
Right.
And the idea was hopefully they would take that $150 and plow it into another day to get those numbers up. And that's exactly what Fast told me he's going to do. He's going to come back, I think it's this weekend, he's going to take another shot at it and add to his stack. So I love this idea from the beginning when Jeff came up with it, and I love it more now that we're seeing in practice and seeing that people are getting real excited about it. I don't know what the chip leader is now. When I was over there on Monday, it was 300 and some thousand in chips.
Oh, yeah, there's at least three of them like that. And our friend John Gordon, Muscles.
Yeah, John Gordon was
guy.
The top
he was one of the top guys. So you're going to see some guys with some massive stacks. So it encourages everybody to keep playing. You know, it's just fantastic.
Well, just show you how many chips are in play in each of these flights, too, right? So, yeah. you know, the naysayers out there are like, well, no one's going to want to take just one shot at this thing. You know, hey, we'll have to see how it goes after 18 flights here, but I would think if you're moving on 300,000 chips in any tournament, you're in a good shape. So,
yeah,
you know, so there's definitely a path, and I think a fairly easy path for players to take one shot, 150, and win a gajillion $1,000 out of this prize pool if they have a good run on day one and keep it going on day two. So it's a really, really cool format. I really like it.
Yep.
And of course, you know, we don't want to be in the position of pause or laughter, putting our own faces on the cover of the magazine. The winner of this main event will appear on our December cover. And so we can't play it. I would love to play this event. I would be out there all day. You'd be like, Scott, you're not getting any work done. I'm like, I don't care. I'm trying to advance my stacks. But we can't play. But I do like to support these events by playing in the quote-unquote undercard events, right, which I think are funny because all the undercard events
are
in this
expensive.
Are much more expensive than the main event.
It's crazy.
And so Monday I went out there for the six max. Tonight I'm headed out for the open-faced Chinese pineapple. And then next week there's a PLO. So three great events for me. But I really like the six max because it just kind of shows the weakness in my game, right? That the six max forces me to be as aggressive as I should be in a 9 or 10 player.
Yes. Yes, we've discussed this.
Right. And yeah. I really can't understand why I can't make that transition. Because I know it, right?
Yeah.
I'm like the kid that keeps touching the oven. Or, I mean, the stove. Burning my hands. Yeah. Like, I know it hurts, but I can't stop doing it, right? So I know I need to be more aggressive in a full field, but I just can't do it. So the six max forces me to, right? So I sit down on this thing, and immediately, game had to change right away. I look across from me, it's Carlos Loving.
Oh, jeez.
Who used to deal on one of our cruises, and it's just been lighting up Florida the last year or so. Pretty soon after that, Mike Lackey sits down, another one of our former dealers who's also been lighting up Florida the last couple of years.
Yep.
And a couple other players at the table I didn't recognize, but they knew Mike and Carlos, and you know, three hands in it. I could tell they were players. So if you do the math, there's only six people at the table. guess who's not like the rest of these?
If after the first 30 minutes you don't spot the sucker, you are the sucker. It took you only a mere, what, 2.5 minutes?
Oh, man. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And you know you're at a bad table when other players that you know are good, but not as good as these guys, come over and like, Scott, you're at this table? And I'm like, yep. And they're like, sorry, man. And they walk away shaking their head. And I'm like, man, I had to get the worst table draw ever, right?
Yep.
But I'm proud of myself because I recognized that. I adjusted it, and I knew I couldn't outplay these folks playing the game I normally play at a six max, you know, where I'm getting all excited because I'm being as aggressive as I should be, right?
Right.
So actually, this is how funny this tournament ended up being for me, is instead of being more aggressive, which I need to be, I ended up being less aggressive than I normally am, and it played off for me.
Yeah, well, that kind of makes sense, too. It's kind of the full circle thing, because you're looking at, if you're going to be as aggressive as you want to be, these guys are still going to be hyper-aggressive, and it's going to put you back to being normal anyway. So you go back the other way and throw them off, and that worked out. So that's pretty good. That's smart play.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously when you play that way, you have to catch some breaks. And I went on an amazing heater at one point. I doubled through Mike Lackey. He made a squeeze play with 7-deuce. And I caught him in it with ace-queen and held up and doubled through that. And then right after that, I think three hands in a row, I knocked players out.
Wow.
I had a massive chip stack, and I appreciated the fact that I was getting good comments from the players that I wasn't – it was really hard to get chips off me, and I know they were getting frustrated with it. There were a couple hands of the guy next to me is like, man, you should have lost so much more on that hand. I'm like, oh, thanks. you know, where I flopped, like, I had ace-jack and flopped top pair, and he flopped straight, well, the sky straight. I think he had 5-7, and it was 4-6-8 on the flop, you know, something like that. And I hit a jack on the turn, and he got the minimum out of me because wow. I just wasn't really ready to go to war with these guys, right? I did a lot of trapping, and even Carlos was saying that time. I threw him off his game because, you know, one of these guys would be aggressive, and those players would know that's what that player's doing, but they couldn't do anything because they didn't know what I was going to do because I sat there and trapped all night with, you know, I wasn't raising with ace-king, but I was winning pots with ace-king and things like that. So it was a really good tournament, I thought. And then, of course, you know, when everything's going right like that, something terrible has to happen to end it, right?
No.
So we got down to 19 left. There's, I think, 74 that had entered this, too. And it was pretty nice. It was $7,300 on top for this thing, which would have been a nice little payday, right?
Yep.
And so I got moved to another table, which was great because I got away from all these guys that are really tough. One guy at the table had more chips than I. We were by far the chip leaders at our table. Everybody else was really on fumes at that point. And so what's the lesson there? Not tangle with that guy, right?
Gee, you think? I've only heard that, what, a 6 billion times in the 10 years we've been doing this show.
And I did. I purposely stayed out of his way for the most part. But I had a hand where I had Jack, 10 of hearts, and opened for a raise. He min-raised me. And, of course, you can't fold at that point, right? So I call. And flop came 2 hearts. I'm sorry, it was queen jack of hearts is what I had. Flop came 2 hearts, 10 high. And I made a bet. He min-raised me again. And I shoved on him, which I thought is what I should do, right? Because there's no way he's going to call me unless he has a hand at that point, because he doesn't lose all of his stack to me either, right?
Right.
And he thinks forever and makes a call with ace-queen. Two overs.
No, oh, wow.
Didn't believe me, but...
2 overs.
Even though he didn't believe me, that's a pretty loose call, isn't it?
No, especially with a big stack and a big stack. I mean, one thing if you're just going to eliminate you and you're a short stack, but
exactly.
Two overs for
I was so shocked when he turned that over, and he was shocked when I turned over what I did. As soon as the call was made, everybody's table's like, oh, Scott's got a set of fives here. I'm like, God, I wish I had a set of fives. and of course, I bricked the 2, and boom, I was out. Had I won that, I figured I would have had just less than 10% of chips in play with 18 people left.
Jeez,
which would have been pretty good, since the fact I wasn't spooning off chips at all this entire tournament. Obviously, this guy knocked me out, so he had to have more than 10% chips in play at this point. And Carlos ended up winning it, so I don't know whether this guy made the final table or not. Mike made the final 4 as well, too, Mike Lackey. So that shows you how hard my first table
was.
Yeah,
the 2 of the guys made the final 4, and one of them won it.
Exactly. So
I'm shocked at you, though. I really am. I mean, you Cosenza'd the last hand. I made you laugh while you were drinking. Because it's true, you never do that. Because really, you just call there. You can get away from it when you don't get on the turn and he shoves on you or something crazy. You never play like that, and that's fine, because that's what you need to do sometimes, play different. But, I mean, wow, to put your whole stack in instead of just calling his min raise and seeing the turn. Wow, I've never seen you do that. That's crazy.
And I think my only mistake there was I hesitated a little bit. So he probably picked up that I hesitated and thought I might be making a move. But again, even if I'm making a move, how
he's only got 2 overs.
Call?
Exactly. You know? You could have anything.
I mean, I could have bottom pair, and he would be a dog at that point, almost.
Man.
Maybe, right? Yeah. They're certainly not worth risking your... I mean, that was his tournament there. I mean, he wouldn't have been out, but he would have been crippled.
Yeah.
And it was my tournament, obviously, so... But,
yeah, that's crazy you guys got involved. That's a bad call on his part. I mean, I don't care if you are. I mean, the only way it's a good call is if he 100% puts you on a hand or... You know what I mean? But there's no way he can possibly do that. Everyone else thought you had a set of 5s, so there's no way he puts you on a hand that he's beating. You know, and he's only got 2 overs, so that means that if you have anything, he has to have 1 of 6 outs and hopes that those 6 outs are even good when he hits them. That's a bad call on his part. I hope he didn't cash.
Well, the funny thing, too, is if it was my first table and I did that to Carlos or Mike or one of those players, they would have folded in a minute.
Yeah, sure.
Because they saw how I've been playing, and they're like, my gosh, if he's putting a stack in, he's got to have something here. Which I did use to my advantage in that first table. That's what was kind of cool, is, you know, once I realized that they were really paying attention to me, which I should have known, because good players do pay attention to people, right?
Right.
Then I was able to use that to my benefit as well, too. So I feel terrible I didn't get any money out of that. But I don't think I felt better at a tournament that I didn't cash in ever. It was a really nice feeling. You know, it's a bigger buy than I normally have, 340, and I thought I adjusted well. And we'll take a shot at the Chinese tonight, which I'm sure I'm way outclassed in as well, too. So,
well, you never know. And
I have my little underdog shirt on.
And just one last thing about it, too. That was another lesson to learn is, you know, when you move from table to table, you got to remember that your reputation from the other table doesn't come with you.
Gone. Yeah.
You know, and not that you didn't remember that. I'm just saying that's something to remember for others to do is that, you know, you played so hard and everybody's paying attention over there. It doesn't mean they're going to pay attention at the other table. It doesn't mean that they know that you were tight all night and now you shoved. They should be folding. But this guy doesn't trust you with ace-queen. He makes a call there. That's still a bad call to me, though, no matter how you play, no matter who you are. That's a bad call. But
yeah. Well.
You know, you brought up Faso, and we had a home game on the first night of the Antioch Poker Tour event at Derby Lane. And so we played in it, and then Andrew was there with his wife Sarah, and they went down to the Antioch Poker Tour event afterward, and we had a good time. It was an interesting lesson in adjusting to table mates and stuff, which is weird because it's a home game. But we had a thing where two of our players were going to show up later. So you went from like six-handed to seven-handed to eight-handed. And there's definitely, and then you get different personalities joining the table while no one else leaves. So, you know, you had to sort of, you know, adjust for, you know, in the beginning we were playing sort of shorthanded in that it was six people. For a home game, it's not really that short when you're playing in our home game, at least, because we're always six or seven when we have our home games. So it was nice. I was doing really well early on, and then one guy joined later, and then I started to watch my profits dwindle a little bit, and then Faso joined, and then my profits would dwindle a little bit again, because you have to make that adjustment that you're playing more people now. The hands have to be better to start with and things like that. So it was interesting, and I ended up leaving with more than I showed up with, which was nice. But the moment of the day has to, you know how Fassel has the most nicknames of anybody we know?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, what you know, we call him,
including
like,
ones that we didn't even give him.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Well, we used to think we were calling him Fatso.
Yeah, Fatso, Lance, you know, Bard, you know, all these nicknames he gets. Well, he's got a new one. We're in the middle of stud. Now, for the amount of time that he'd gotten there before this came up, he'd been kind of off a little bit. He was off on his game a little bit. He was off in his comments. You know, he wasn't as funny as, you know, something was wrong with him. We couldn't really tell what it was. And we're like, what is going on with you, Mike? Are you tired or something? What is wrong with you? You know, and he's like, I don't know. I'm getting old, or, you know, we don't know. So later on, we're playing stud, and he's dealing. And there's just two people to his left that are in the hand, okay? And there are two to his left, and he's dealing. There are only two left in the hand. And so the person furthest away from him has the better hand. So their action is first. So they went check, check or something. So Fassel flips over a card and deals to that person, hurdling it over the person who's immediately to his left.
Oh my gosh.
And we said, Mike, whoa, whoa, what are you doing? He's like, what? I said, you dealt to the person with the best hand. The best hand has action first, but you don't deal to them first. He's like, I know. What am I doing? I'm like, I don't know. What are you doing? So we put the card back, and then he deals to the right person this time. And then so as they're doing their action, whether or not, we're all busting his chops a little bit. We're like, what are you? You know, what's wrong with you? You know. So then he's like, I know. I know I'm not supposed to do that. There's no reason for me to even think that I would deal to the person with the best hand. So meanwhile, as he's saying this, it goes, you know, bet, call, or whatever. And so we're like, all right, Fifth Street, you know. And he's like, I know I'm not supposed to. And literally, like, if we were in a cartoon, as the words coming out of his mouth are still in that cartoon bubble over his head, he's throwing the next card to the person with the best hand again, as if the card hurtles through the air and can pop the air bubble of the words coming out of his mouth saying, I know I'm not supposed to deal to the person with the best hand, and he does it again. Finally, I go, Faso, are you having a stroke? And, like, all of a sudden, you know, Frank's ears perk up because Frank's a doctor, you know. He's like, hey, Mike, are you okay? Are you having a stroke? I mean, we're starting to – I mean, he was acting like he was having a stroke. We were concerned for his health. And, of course, they said, you better call 911 because you don't want Frank working on you. And everybody started laughing. So the rest of the day, every time he would do something that just wasn't funny or made a mistake or – we were calling him Strokey.
Oh, my gosh.
So, I mean, all game, we were calling him Strokey, and we had a lot of fun with him. But, of course, he won the most money, or Skittles.
Of course, yeah.
And so, what does it say for our game when the guy having a stroke kicks your ass all day in the home game, you know? And he showed up late and still won a ton of money. So, it was a lot of fun. But, yeah, so now if you're ever referring to Faso, you can call him Fatso, Bard, Lance, and Strokey. All those are acceptable now. But it was nice that Frank hosted the home game, and we had a good time. So
yeah, Frank always puts on a good spread there. He has a little the lemonade out and the
and pizza.
Yeah, and chips and salsa and the.
Oh, and I'm his boy Friday, by the way, too. I had to put the table out for him because his back was bothering him. I had to put it away for him. You know, I'm his little lackey. So.
I always thought you'd make a good cabana boy.
I am a good cabana boy.
All right. Well, I'm very excited for this next part. You know, because how often has it been over the last 9 years or so with the show that people have emailed us and say, Scott and Chris, what can I do to help Annie up?
Yeah.
And there's really not much we could tell you other than we just appreciate the support. You know, come on a cruise every once in a while, something like that. Go to one of our events. But now this is go time. This is 9 years have been building up to this. So if you're out there and you've ever asked us what you could do for Annie up, or if you've thought about asking us and you just haven't, this is what we need your help with. On January 19th, that's MLK Day, Annie Up and Blue Shark Optics are teaming up to promote an ambitious series of poker events and poker rooms nationwide, actually even worldwide. We had one of our listeners in England on my Facebook page said, hey, can we do it over here? Absolutely.
Awesome.
So if you're in Australia, whatever, I don't care. We're trying to do good here. But the idea is to collect donations of food and cash to support local food banks and pantries. So essentially what we're doing is we're just asking poker rooms just to not even create an event. These aren't charity tournaments, you know, where they're taking money out of the prize pool, though they can if they want. Just pick one of their tournaments on their schedule, call it the Restock the Shelves event, and allow representatives of a local food bank or pantry or some kind of food organization to be on site and just be there to collect donations of food and cash from people that want to. Obviously, if rooms want to make their event a little more special, that's great. You know, Tampa Bay Downs here locally is going to give everybody that donates something 500 more units in the tournament, which is kind of cool. Expect other rooms to do something like that. But really, all we're just asking for is to let local food banks come on and collect money and food. So here's what we need from the Annie Up Nation. We need volunteers everywhere. We need you to volunteer to represent Team Annie Up or Team Blue Shark Optics if you don't like us. Don't care. So this is what we're asking of volunteers if you're willing to do this. We want you to contact the manager of your favorite poker venue. It doesn't have to be a poker room. It could be a charity location or a league or wherever else you play. And ask them to host an event. And if they're agreeable, that's great. And then work with them to find a local food bank to be a beneficiary of the event. Contact them and get them set up to come in and collect the donations. And then, of course, spread the word to your friends. And then come out and play. And we're making this kind of fun for our volunteers. Carrie, the owner of Blue Shark Optics, who really kind of nudged us to do this. And one of the guys that has the biggest heart in poker anywhere. And we want to make this kind of fun, so, you know, we're going to do a last longer for all of the people that play.
Right,
so
if
you're an Annie Up and a Team Annie Up player, and you last longer than the Team Blue Shark Optics player, that's 1 point for Team Annie Up. And it's just a big bragging kind of things. There's no prizes or anything like that, but we're going to make it fun for you as well too. So we're hoping as many of our listeners as possible can help us with this, because it's daunting to contact 400 and some poker rooms around the country ourselves. So the more people we get that help get the word out and help set up these events, the better it is. And the great thing is all this food goes back to your local communities. This isn't all going to some big national organization where, you know, you don't know what happens to it. Going right back to where you live. So here's the website for all the details, antiupmagazine.com/restock. And again, the event's called Restock the Shelves. It's January 19th. And go to the website, and there's ways to contact us if you want to be involved. So hope to hear from a ton of Annie Up folks in the next week or so.
Very good. All right, Horseshoe Baltimore, Baltimore's newest casino, is running $200 satellites every Friday night for our April 10th sailing of the Annie Up Poker Cruise out of Baltimore. Also, it's adding a cruise package to the 7 p.m. December 20th event of its upcoming Charm City Holiday Extravaganza. More details for that and other Annie Up Cruise events at AnnieUpCruises.com. All right, our listener spotlight. Each week, we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's sponsor is Smapsoft, creator of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products. Download the app today by visiting the iTunes store. Comes from Mark Schlotterbeck, and he says, Is it wrong that I saved my last email from the last sit and go on PokerStars? Is there an ETA for online poker in Ohio? The third of never?
First of all, I love the fact that he saved the last email. You know, it's a little memento of times of the past, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so here's the thing on online poker in Ohio. I don't know exactly when the third of never is, but it sounds pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Specifically in Ohio, actually, we're going to take this, you know, nationwide, this discussion, so it's not just about Ohio. But generally what we like to see, what we do see in these kind of situations is until you get pressure from surrounding states, it's really hard to get this ball moving, right? So this is exactly what happened in Ohio with the brick-and-mortar casinos, right? It took every state surrounding it, Michigan, Indiana, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, every state but Kentucky, to open casinos and suck all that business out of Ohio, right?
Yeah.
Where Ohio said, you know what, we need to build our own and keep all that money here in the state, right? So I know Pennsylvania is talking about online now. So, you know, if they get up and running, then that might put a little pressure on Ohio to do the same thing. But, you know, you're talking probably a couple years for Pennsylvania, even if they approve it soon, be all the testing and all that stuff.
Yes, yes.
So, and then it's going to prove to be a success. And right now, unfortunately, none of the state sites are really can be considered successes, can they? In New Jersey and Delaware and Nevada.
Not yet, yeah.
Some of them are doing all right, but not successful, right? So that's kind of what you're looking at there. And unless something else happens in Ohio, it's going to be that hard. So I really think at this point for a lot of folks, it's more likely that we'll get something on the federal level before you see a ton of more states jump on. But there are some other states that are having conversations. But I would encourage you, if you live in Ohio, to go to one of the Hollywoods or Horseshoes to play poker. Online, it's just not going to happen there in a while. But obviously, you know, keep in touch with your folks at the PPA, because they have their finger on the pulse a lot more than we do on this. And they can obviously tell you how to write your lawmakers to push it along.
All right, it's time to call the floor. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Ante Up logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping. This comes from Steve Pavlicek. It says, during a home game, we had three players in a hand, two of which are all in, and we have a main pot and a side pot. The short stack is eliminated, and the other two players have the same hand and split the pots. I split the side pot, and another player split the small main pot. Both pots end up having an extra chip. Some players say that both players should win the same amount of chips from the split pot, but I ruled that each pot has to be awarded separately, and the player to the left of the dealer ended up getting both extra chips. Was my ruling correct?
Sam says, I strictly follow TDA rules, and the TDA states the side pots are to be split separately. So yes, you awarded the chips correctly.
All right, nice and easy.
Yay! it wasn't quite nice and easy because it was difficult. The TDA rules were a little unclear on this because they also have a section where they talked about split pot games. But that was not this situation here. But then they also had another rule earlier that did address this. So it got a little confusing. So it was good that, I responded to Steve. I showed him some of the rules, and he went and read the TDA rules and said, what about this rule? And I'm like, hey, that's great. And then Sam, of course, said the same thing. So I will say this again. For all of you out there with home games, if you find yourself in the situation where you're going to have to be the floor here, the best thing you can do is download the TDA rules. It's completely free to go to their website and do it. They also have an app that I think does cost $5 or something, but it goes right back into the organization. Have the TDA rules on hand, or if you have a situation, at least call them up on your phone or your computer or something. Yep. And it's going to solve you a ton of problems.
Yeah, we haven't had to do it a lot in our home game, but we've done it where we just, Gambit or somebody will get it up on his phone, or even Robert's rules too for cash games, things like that. So it's always good to have somebody who has access to that at least. All right, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. We're going to refresh our memories here with part one of episode 73.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I am Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are still at that rare 1-2 PLO8 game. We've had a good run of cards and have been playing fairly well. We've doubled our stack and currently sit with 400. Under the gun limps, plus 1 folds, MP folds, MP1 calls, and we look down at the Ace of Spades, Jack of Spades, 4 of Hearts, 4 of Diamonds, and the Hijack. We've got potential both ways in this one, but it isn't super strong, so we limp as well. Maybe a raise was in order? The button limps, small blind completes, big blind checks, and we're going to a flop with $12 and 6 players seeing it. These guys love to see flops. It comes down the Jack of Hearts, 8 of Spades, 5 of Spades. It's checked around to us, and we decide to make a bet. We've got top pair with the nut flush draw, so we're going to bet on the come. But we want to discourage any weak low draws out of this hand. We make a pot-sized bet. Everyone folds except for the big blind who started this hand with around 250. He seems like a fairly solid player with 2 leaks. He plays too many hands and can't let go of draws, even if they're not to the nuts. With $36 in the pot, the turn is the Ace of Hearts. This seems to be a pretty good card for us. We've now made top 2 and still have the nut flush draw for backup, but it does complete the low. And since our player came out of the big blind, he could really have anything. This is exactly what's going through our mind when he makes a $20 bet. So we've got a decent made hand and a lot of potential to improve. We could even make a weak low. What's the play?
Now, normally I wouldn't want to poke the bear in the spot. Actually, normally I don't like poking bears at all.
No,
they get scary.
It's not good practice.
But I gotta say, O'Malley's got me a little intrigued by telling us his opponent is loose and doesn't fold non-nut draws. You know, this is the thing we always go through with this, right? Because he gives us this
nugget
information, and sometimes it's misdirection and sometimes it's not. So we try to be too smart and overthink this. But I'm gonna try to overthink this a little bit based off that information. So this is what I'm going to say. I'm going to say if I felt comfortable that my raise would only be called and not re-raised, I might incline to do so at this point. But I don't want to face a re-raise here with this what essentially is a one-way hand, and a one-way hand that actually might need to improve to win.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind the call here. Our redraw to the nut flush is strong, and the top two has a redraw to top boat. But like you said, you know, I don't want to get pushed out of this pot either. So I don't mind making a call here and seeing what happens instead of just going crazy and then getting pushed out of this hand. So let's see what happens.
Hello again. We've got those 3 familiar options. Call, raise, or fold. I'm just not sure what would have made him come alive all of a sudden. This card completed no nut high hands, only the nut low. Would he really be betting with just the nut low? I really don't think so. He's got to have something else, but I can't help but feel like it's the nut low with some kind of backup draw. Maybe a straight? It can't be the nut spade flush draw. We've got that one. Is it possible it's a heart draw? I want to discourage him from making a similar play in the future, so we make a raise. There's $36 in the pot, plus the $20 he just bet. We're going to make it $50 to go. Our opponent cuts a big stack off like he's going to raise, hesitates for a minute, and throws in the $30. It's got to be Trey Deuce, right? The river is beautiful, the 10 of spades. And with about 130 in the pot, we get into a little raising war. It's all minutia at this point. I know we're chopping. But when he leads out for $80, I have to make sure, so I repot him, which makes him toss the rest of his stack in. What's he thinking? I could easily have him quartered. We're playing to chop $8 minus the rake, and I let out a little groan after I show my nut flush, and he rolls over the 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs, Trey of spades, Deuce of spades. Well, at least I get the extra dollar for the high hand. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, sometimes all you can do is break even. Rest in peace, Tawny Baird. You were taken from this world too soon, and you will be missed. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, we got just got that call and turn, which is what I was hoping for. After the river came down, of course, the thrust is elementary. So, but I'm curious as to what we would have done had our opponent raised us on the turn.
See, this is a typical PLO 8 hand or result, and it's another reason to hate this stupid variation of this stupid game.
All this heavy thaw going in, and you end up splitting the pot.
Yeah, and you know, and the other thing too is now you've got people who just play the low. They've got a low, and they'll shove it in your face, and they put you to the test, which I know you'll say, well, that's the beauty of the game. And I'll say, no, it's not the beauty of the game. It's the stupidity of the game. And it's typical. He puts gets through the ringer here for this just to get his money back. You know, it's one thing if you're playing stud eight. We all have our own hands. You know, I mean, you know, take the rake out, and he gets nothing. So, I mean, really, you know, if you're playing stud eight and you have your own hand, that's when the true beauty of split pot games comes in. But when it's just like, oh, I got ace deuce, I'm going to shove on you because it's PLOE. Bastardized devil's game. So, but you know what, O'Malley? I'm glad that you didn't lose any money on it. So that's always good.
You know, I'm pretty sure for the longest time I have been Edith in this relationship.
And I've been Archie.
Clearly her Archie Bunker, yes.
That was an awesome television show, by the way.
It was.
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't make them like that anymore.
No, they don't.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. This week's sponsor is J Design Playing Cards, official playing cards of Anti Up. Check out J Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. And this comes from Dave McKenzie. He hasn't said whether he's one of the McKenzie brothers. But I'm just going to go ahead and assume that he is, right?
Okay.
Because how cool would that be?
That'd be awesome.
Actually, his email says Bob McKenzie, but then he says he goes by Dave. So,
so Bob and Dave's.
Yeah.
Okay. Alter ego.
All right. So he's got a. He says I got a rather odd multi-villain hand of the week for you guys.
Okay.
Wow. Have we had multiple villains in a hand in a while?
That's crazy.
If ever. Came up during a online $3.30 No Limit Omaha tournament. Because I love this tourney. I love this tourney because the general skill level is awful. Half the players don't seem to have played Omaha before and have accidentally registered to the wrong tournament. Oh, man, I remember that all the time, right?
Yeah.
I remember that more in limit tournaments online. You get somebody that's like, oh, hey, how come? Oh, you got to be kidding me. This is a limit tournament? In the chat box, I'm like, yes, love it. He says, most players seem to limp a lot and then get overcommitted to draws. It's early going. Blind levels are 40-80 with an ante of 10. And doesn't have chips. Okay, I'm sorry. Says, I'm in the big blind with 6 of clubs, 10 of clubs, 4 of diamonds, 10 of diamonds, with about double the average stack with about 5,200. All right, so plenty of play here.
Okay.
Under the gun, min raises to 160. 3 calls, as well as the button and the small blind. I'm sorry. Boy, a little confusing. 3 calls from middle position players, as well as the button. The small blind folds, and now it's on us. So we have 4 callers, all calling this min raise, and we are in the big blind with 6 of clubs, 10 of clubs, 4 diamonds, 10 of diamonds. What do you do, Hotshot?
All right, so we have 10-10, 6-4 double suited, and we have to call a min raise, but there's so much money out there that it's probably the right thing to do is just call and hope we hit it really hard. And if we don't hit it really hard, then we just get out.
I think that's the key. You got to hit it really hard.
I mean, you got to flop like 10-6, 2 or something, deuce.
Yeah, and then, you don't want to foul this off. This is a straight dead center 400.
Yeah.
Over the wall.
I get you. So... we want to hit it in the black. So, in other words, I'm going to call. I'm actually on the fence about folding, but
I could absolutely defend a fold here.
Yeah. So I'm not going to fold because it's hand of the week, and I don't want anybody saying I'm too nitty. But I have to go into this hand thinking I'm out of position for the rest of the hand in no limit hold Omaha. I mean, so that's crazy already. Guys who are min raising and playing these hands. They have to have better than 10-10. You have no nut draws at all, really, unless some weird, bizarre baby straight comes out. And even that, you can't be too you know, strong in because there's two more cards to come after that flop. So you really got to hit it hard. So I'm going to call, but not
about 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, flops. That's not the nut flop. That's not the nut.
Well, but it'd be a straight
flush. Oh, straight flush. Yeah, okay. Yes. Yeah, 7, 8, 9 comes on this flop. It's not a hand of the week. So we know that's not happening. But really, yeah. So that's even more. What are the, it's 35,000 to 1 for that to happen, probably. So really, you're not playing for 35,000 1 odds in that pot. It's only a min raise. So let's just hope we hit it hard and call here.
Well, this is why I like Hand of the Week, because we're talking about situations that are never going to happen again, right? So you're trying to take the lessons from what we're talking about here and apply that to other situations.
Yes.
So when we mentioned folding here, I know there's probably a lot of people whose heads just exploded because they're saying, you've got 5,200 units, it's 40-80. You're not going to call 80 here and take a shot at quads or something like that? Yeah, I think it'd be ridiculous to fold here. Most of the time, you're going to find yourself in this situation. The gap between your chip stack and the blinds are not going to be that high. And I think it's really dangerous to make this call here. This is another one of those, just because it's a discount doesn't make it a deal kind of situations. But in this situation, since we're so deep stack, I think it's pretty crazy not to take the flyer here.
Right, you just got to be disciplined. That's the thing. The discipline is the key.
Absolutely. You got to be disciplined on this. And if you don't hit this hard, let it go. Get a sandwich, wait for the next hand.
Yep.
All right. So our hero says 10-4, 10-6, double suited. Isn't a very strong hand, but it's a good spot for a call, which is what I do. 10-50 in the pot, and the flop is the 4 of spades, deuce of clubs, queen of clubs. And we are obviously first to act.
I check. I mean, we don't even have close to a nut flush draw. I mean, we only have a pair of 4s, which don't help us because we already have a pair of 10s in our hand. So I check, and if somebody bets, I'm probably getting out of there. Because this is nothing.
Definitely make, getting out of
this. Yeah, this is nothing. Oh, good, you make a flush? Oh, good, you made a 10-high flush on the turn. Good for you. Now how do you feel? You know, I mean, so, and the 4 is nothing. That's not going to help us. Another 4 comes, big deal. So, you know, even that, somebody could still have queens full or, you know, whatever. So,
or a bigger 4.
Or a bigger 4 than you. Yep. So it's just not a good hand. So there's I'm checking.
Nothing to like about this.
I'm hoping for a free card here. I'm not putting any more money in the pot.
Yeah, really, at this point, I'm just hoping it gets checked around all the way to the end, which never happens online,
no,
right?
No, especially not. No limit.
Squeeze out a flush with or trips or something like that. But that's doubtful that's going to happen. But, yeah, I'm checking. First bet, I'm gone and get my sandwich and wait for my small blind.
Yep.
All right, well, our hero does check, which he says is the only reasonable thing to do, and it checks around to the button who bets the minimum 80. He says this seems to be a usual move for him, even though it doesn't seem to make any sense. What do we do?
Well, here's the deal. It doesn't matter if it makes sense because we're still behind. I mean, we don't have to analyze that bet at all because right. It's still a bet that we're going to fold to, so we're going to let
exactly.
It go.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is a big difference between the preflop calling the 80 and now calling the 80 is because most of our hand has been decided now, right?
Yes.
And we know that really what we were seriously hoping for on preflop was a boat or better, right?
Yep.
And that's not going to happen now unless you get runner 10s or something crazy like that. So at this point, I'm done, out. Whereas before, I could make that defend that 80 call because who knew what was going to come on the flop.
I can't disagree with you.
You can, but you just don't want
to. No, I can't. I can't.
all right, so our hero says, there aren't many cards that I would actually want to see on the turn, but I call for 80 because it's too cheap not to. Say it together, folks. Because it's a discount. Doesn't make it a deal.
That's right. I agree.
There's one fold, and the other three players call. Now we're at 14-50 in the pot, and the turn is the 4 of hearts. So our board now is 4 of spades, deuce of clubs, queen of clubs, 4 of hearts. We now have 3 4s with a crappy kicker. What do we do?
I still check.
Yep.
I'm still done with this hand. Again, I mean, 3 4s now, okay, you may have that. But again, queens full is always out there. Another 4 is out there with a better. You know, you're talking about 4 cards per player at a, what, 8, 9, 10 handed table. I mean, that's 40 cards from the deck is how out of 52. You know, you got to think that 4 is out there, and you know if a 4 is out there, they got a better kicker than a 10. So I'm still checking, and if it's another cheap bet like 80, I might call, but if it's some big bet, forget it.
Right. All right, our hero said, I resigned myself to drawing to the club flush, which I probably didn't want to hit anyway. Bingo.
Right.
Because they don't want to get me into trouble. Bingo, bingo. But the four is an interesting card. No, it's not. It's not. I check for pot control with the idea of raising any smaller bet that gets made and calling any bigger bet that gets made. Oh, boy.
Oh.
I'm like, don't go in there. That's when I kind of feel like screaming at the movie theater.
Yeah. Right? Yep.
If somebody already had trips on the flop, they probably would have bet to protect against the flush. And at the moment, I'm only worried about somebody having the other four with a higher kicker and people hanging in withdrawals. Well, that's a ton of stuff to be worried about. It's like saying, I'm only worried about the guy with the chainsaw and the guy there with the M16. Other than that, I'm fine walking down this dark alley.
By the way, if I had a set of deuces, I would not have bet that flop.
No, no.
Again, maybe a set someone, of queens. Right? Yeah, yeah, maybe a set of queens.
Got to have the top set or your set is really not great.
Right. And
so, I mean, that's how hard Omaha is right now. And we're sitting here with three fours with crappy kicker.
Yeah.
And we didn't even have that on the flop. So, absolutely. There's a lot of danger here. And someone did bet. I mean, it was a ridiculous bet into that pot, right? But right. Someone did bet. So, they certainly weren't betting for protection. So, you don't know what that means. But a ton of people called as well, too. So, there's a lot of danger here. A lot of danger.
Yes.
Let's see. All right. So, the player in front of me bets 500. And they're one fold. Two calls, and he gets back to us.
Mm.
We're going to express pass to this hand.
Yeah, we're going to see you. I mean, I just... Now
500
you
doesn't even tempt us at this point. If it's another 80, then I'm like, all right.
Whatever. Yeah, now 500 is way too much to call here for us.
500 shuts this hand down easily for us.
Yeah, I'm done.
Our hero opts to call. He says there's a much chance... there's too much chance that I'm behind a bigger four or slow-played full house, and I don't want to lose my whole stack on the hand. I call with the idea of reevaluating on the river. Bob, my friend, not picking on you.
No.
Just reevaluate before you put that 500 in.
You pick on Bob, I'll pick on Dave.
That's right. Dave, I'm sorry. I'm serious. At this point, that 500 is wasted. At this point now, you're hoping for that case four. That's really the only thing. Or I guess one of the 2 10s.
Yeah. And even that, you still could
but
be
even
behind.
That, you might be behind, right?
You could be.
Absolutely. So, yeah, 500 at this point, I mean, that's more than 10% of your stack at
this point. Yeah.
And you have less than a 10% chance of winning this hand, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, 34.50 in the pot now. And the river is the ace of clubs. So our final board is four of spades, deuce of clubs, queen of clubs, four of hearts. Ace of clubs. We hit our clubs, obviously not the nuts. And the aggressor in the turn has us covered, as well as the other two players in the hand. The other two players in the hand have about 1,800 each. What do we do?
We have the 947th best hand. What do you think we do?
I'm actually encouraged now because I have a chance of winning this hand now, I think. I'm certainly not putting any money in this. I'm hoping it checks around. But I think I have a better chance of winning this now than I did with the
You really think that with all those calls?
I mean, I have a chance. I'm not saying it's a good chance. It's one of those, so you're saying I have a chance.
Yeah.
It's exactly what this is. Yeah. It's not a good chance, but I feel like I might.
You have a main hand online
where I'm like, you know, I'm in a hand that I know I shouldn't be. I'm not committing a lot of money, although the 500 was a lot, I think. And you get to the river, and I'm like, oh, wow, I actually improved. Maybe, just maybe, I can throw this needle, no one's going to bet, and I'm going to get the winner. Happens one out of 12 times, right?
Yeah. So if you're getting 12 to 1 of money on your money on the street, make a call. But it's not going to happen. So, of course, we check.
Yes, our hero does check. He says, I've hit the flush, but it's definitely not the card I wanted to see. I'm trailing several different potential full houses and a higher flush. I'm checking, willing to call a smallish bet before folding to anything serious.
And not just a higher flush, but numerous higher flushes.
Right, exactly.
And that's the thing. That's the key. You know, the king of clubs is out. The jack of clubs is out. You know, those are two flushes that beat you right there and with any other two clubs. So that's two hands. Then quads, which isn't possible, but a better full house with the four is better. A better full house with pocket queens is better. Pocket eights is most certainly a hand that could be out there now.
Right.
So you're behind by like six hands at least, so... Yeah, don't put any more money in his hand, his pot. Yeah.
Well, it took him to the river, but he got his head. Dave Pop got his head right here because now he's willing to call a smallish bet before doing anything serious. So
yeah.
Smallest bet I'm hoping is 80.
Yeah.
But we'll see what happens. It says the next player bets 1,000. Player after him shoves for his remaining 1,800. Button folds and it's back on us. Say it together. Fold. 6,250 in the pot. And he says one player who could still raise left to act after us. Our hero thinks about it for a minute, but just can't call. Much celebration. I can't possibly see myself being ahead the way the action is gone. Absolutely not. The other player calls the extra 800. The aggressor on the turn tables ace tray of diamonds, four of clubs, and six of spades. Ace full house, yeah. Fours over aces. The other player who came alive on the river had king of clubs, seven of diamonds, ace of spades, ace of hearts for rivered full house, aces over fours. And our hero says, I probably played the hand wrong and got drawn into by all the small betting the whole way, but I'd be interested to hear what you think. And I think there's no confusion on what we think.
What's right? interesting, no, there's no confusion. I think we both agreed the whole way through, which is really scary. But the thing about what these guys choose to play for hands and how they choose to play them is interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, the ace three of diamonds, really, what's he doing with that? The only thing that he's in there for is those two cards, really, that he's hoping to make a nut
flush. And a wheel draw, too, with a six. Then, I mean,
yeah.
this is not even high-low.
It's not high-low. High that's low. What I mean. It's not high-low. So that's why I'm saying that's
there are
that's
some potential really, there. I mean, for 80, for min-raise, absolutely, I'm calling that.
Yeah.
And seeing something now, I don't know, to go back to whatever the flop was. Yeah, flopped, and he flops straight draw. So.
Right. But no diamonds. Only really a and pair of fours 80. And a gut shot straight draw.
And then hits his third four. Yeah, so, I mean, he played well.
But the third four, yeah, that by having the ace, he can call there, you know, when he hits that third
right,
four.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. So that's to show you why your hand should have been folded because, or at least not gotten into any trouble because when people are making it minimum raises – and they had their deep stacked enough that they can call or it doesn't really affect them, you can see a type of hands that stick around. Whereas if it went raise and re-raise, you know, the ace 3, 4, 6 is not sticking around, even if the ace is suited. You know, and so you got to know what you're up against. So when you're sitting there saying, oh, it's not that much, and I've got the third four. Well, you know what? It wasn't really a largely raised pot pre-flop, so that third four, a fourth four is probably out, and that's why that guy's around, you know? So got to think about it. And then the ace-ace, I couldn't keep track of it all. Was the ace-ace the guy who min-raised early?
No, he only came live on the river. This guy actually played it worse than we did, I think.
Okay.
And actually won the pot. That's what really gives me the red ass here, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, here's the thing with no limit. This is why this game should be pot limit. With no limit, that guy should have technically moved all in preflop. That's the technical correct play way to play. That's why.
Right, because he knows he can't be being beat at that point.
That's right. That's why it's played pot limit, so people can't do that. Now, I'm not saying he should have done that. But he certainly shouldn't have let 18 people in his hand for a min-raise
right.
with pocket aces. That's just ridiculous. And then nothing really exciting on the flop for him. Of course, the 80 got sucked in like everybody else. But then the turn is where this guy came off the rails.
Yeah.
There's nothing on that turn for him.
No.
He's 500, he's got top pair. Actually, he has two pair at that point. But, you know, you got pocket aces. I mean, he was really dead to that two-outer and hit it. That's crazy.
Yeah. You know, there's some interesting thoughts behind if that king of clubs and there was no paired board, you know, then he's saying, hey, I've got the king of clubs. The ace of clubs comes out. Now it's like, hey, I got the nut flush. Even though I don't have the other club, I can represent it. That kind of stuff. You can get into that stuff later, but the board paired on the turn, you know what I mean? So his club wasn't going to play.
Kills that. Yep,
yeah, it kills that idea. So it's just, you know, I don't know. If the ace came on the turn, ace of clubs, then it's a whole different representing hand, you know. But, yeah, I don't know what that guy's doing in this hand after that 500 bet on the turn when all he has is aces in his hand. You know, everybody
Which
has a pair of fours. So.
Really difficult for our hero here, right? Because when you see players playing like this, it's tempting to get involved in hands. But it's also very difficult to beat them without the best hand. You know, you're not pushing these people off of hands, right?
Right.
So at that point, you've got to play ABC poker, and that's really difficult because now you're dependent on the cards getting there.
That's right.
But what I'll remind folks again, too, if you're new to Omaha, the best way to learn this game is to sit around, deal out four hands to nine people, you know, set up your stuffed animals in the living room if you want, deal them out, and then immediately turn the cards over and look at just what you're up against. Every single hand.
Yep.
And see how everybody probably has a hand they're going to play, how everybody has a hand that they shouldn't play but will play, and how weak your hand literally looks. I mean, obviously our hero here knew his hand was weak at the beginning. He admitted that, just got sucked in. But I think if you do that over and over, just keep looking at 10 sets of four cards each, you'll really tighten up and play right. Because once you get sucked into these things, this is how people lose money in Omaha.
And that's one of my favorite things to do with the 101 classes when I teach for Hold'em for on our cruise ships is I like to – people – there's always inevitably somebody who will play some horrible hand and when we do the little mock hands and stuff. And I'll say, I'll tell you what, we're playing a full 10 people here, right? And they'll say, yeah. And I take out nine of them and I say, okay, so these nine people – you're up against these nine people, right? And he's like, yeah. I said, now why would you play that hand? Well, it could hit. I said, okay. So I deal out 18 cards. And I deal out a whole board, and I say, okay, let's see if I can beat your hand against that board with these 18 cards. And because it could be any combination of those two cards, and every single time, inevitably, we have the best hand in the 18 cards. And that's how they learn. They can feel it. They're like, oh, wow, I'm up against 18 cards. I'm not just playing my own. And that's the first step into understanding level two. Absolutely. Is that it's not playing your cards, you're playing their cards, and you're playing those people, and vice versa. Same with Omaha. You got to remember that everybody had four cards to start this hand, and when you're playing 10-handed, that's 40 out of 52. Think about how the percentages that every card is out, basically, that you know to beat you. So, by the way, this was played, that was a min raise, crappy cards could be out, you know, and that's what happened with the four and the ace kicker was there. So unless you, so we go back, the initial lesson was, okay, it was affordable to call this because of our stack, but we have to stay diligent and hit, you know, disciplined and hit that hand hard. And if you don't, you have to get out. There was no reason to stick around after that flop, no matter how cheap it was. Nope. It really wasn't.
And definitely not on the turn.
No, absolutely. All right, another good show. Thanks for the McKenzie brothers for sending in their hand. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.